A little mid-afternoon baseball coming your way. Gerrit Cole versus Luis Severino will go to the Bronx for a live report ahead of Game 3 of the ALCS. Is Starkville looking forward to seeing this juggernaut of an LSU offense? We'll head out there and ask the right questions with a team starting a true freshman at quarterback. And Mr. College Football joins us as well. All coming your way. Fastest hour in radio history. Today, Tuesday, October 15th, 2019.
The 2-1. Swing a high drive to right center field. Well hit. This one way back. Fowler looking up at the wall, and it is gone! Victor Robles with his first career postseason home run makes it 7-0.
Shotgun snap is belt high. Rogers gets it. Winds up long. Spiral arching pass down the far sideline. Over the shoulder catch. Hit the pylon. Touchdown! Lazard, 35-yard strike, and it was perfect by Rogers.
I think they made some good adjustments on their side of the ball. They're obviously a, you know, really good defense, very aggressive defense, and you know, I think there was definitely some mistakes, you know, some issues that we had, and we got to do a good job of coaching those up and getting them better. But certainly getting off track doesn't really help us in those situations either, and putting ourselves in longer down and distances against a defense like this is not really where we want to be. So, you know, that would be the first thing we look at.
Well, it was just another typical Monday night in the world of sports. My St. Louis Cardinals are done. The Nationals are punching their ticket to the World Series. They win it. They're up 3-0. Game 4 coming up tonight. Can the Nationals clinch it and sweep my Redbirds? I don't know. Astros first up, as we said, and you heard Clint say it. 3:08, we'll turn it over to the Astros Network straight up at 3 o'clock for the pregame show. Should be a pitcher's duel. Gerrit Cole carrying the weight of the Astros on his shoulders. Luis Severino and that Yankee bullpen in the Bronx. Should be a dandy of a football game. Coming up, of a baseball game. Coming up, last night, by the way, there's an epidemic. There's a problem. Officiating is terrible in the NFL. Two egregious errors against the Detroit Lions last night against the Green Bay Packers, and it sealed their fate and got a Crosby field goal to win it at the end for the Packers, 23-22. A travesty of a game from the officiating standpoint. Detroit had the game won, should have won it, but that's another story for another day. Making news today, LSU men's basketball picked third in the SEC race in the preseason media poll behind Kentucky and Florida. It bodes kind of well for them. Skylar Mays, a second-team All-SEC selection, and he is on the watch list for the Jerry West Award, honoring the nation's top shooting guards. The country likes LSU. They like that brand. 6,450,000 viewers of the LSU-Florida game, ESPN's most watched college football game in nearly 2 years, and Saturday night's most watched sporting event. It just helps, and it helps in recruiting. Thursday night, the spotlight will be on the Ragin' Cajuns as they take on Arkansas State. Go back a year ago. It's so eerily similar, just like now. A year ago, the Ragin' Cajuns suffered a tough loss at App State, 27-17. They just suffered a tough loss at home to App State, 17-10. In a midweek game, then they have to come back and play Arkansas State. And then it was kind of a positive change for Cajuns football as the Ragin' Cajuns took a thrilling 47-43 win over the favored Red Wolves in that bounce-back contest a year ago. During his press luncheon on Monday, head coach Billy Napier talked about what that win a year ago did for his ball club.
Yeah. In particular, to play right after the App State, you know, game where there was a comparison of where we were at prior to that. So I think the App game, the first App game, gave us a little bit of conviction about the work we've been doing. And then to find a way in a back-and-forth game, you know, I think it showed a lot of the mental toughness and maybe the intangible things that we've been working really hard on. So I do think it was a big game. Certainly last year they were picked to win the league and win the West, and to have them in our place was a big deal. So, but, you know, that as much as we love to talk about that, that's not going to impact the game Thursday night.
No question. No question about that. So, Billy, you've had time to decipher the film. You've looked at App State. You've looked at Arkansas State. So what are the keys to getting a win in Jonesboro against Arkansas State Thursday night?
Well, you got to take care of the ball. You know, I mean, these when they've won, they've created takeaways, and in particular, they've scored on defense. So they have the ability to create negatives. They've got explosive players, speed in the back end. They can create takeaways. We're going to have to take care of the ball, you know, and try not to put these explosive playmakers that they have on offense on a short field. We need to make them earn it, and certainly it always starts with that. But this week in particular, I think that's really important.
Thursday night in Jonesboro. More on that to come in the days ahead. Meanwhile, LSU has turned the page. They've forgotten about Florida, setting their sights on Mississippi State. The coaching profession is a 6 degree of separation livelihood. Joe Moorhead, the head coach at Mississippi State, knows Joe Brady. He worked with Joe Brady, taught Joe Brady some things. Coach O was asked Monday at his presser if he had talked to Joe Moorhead about his current whiz kid on the offensive side, Joe Brady.
Yeah, it does help to have him on the staff, obviously. He can give us the reads. He can give us the formations. And obviously, of course, Moorhead is going to do something different than he's normally did, so we don't have that read. I did not talk to Coach Moorhead, but as soon as I hired Joe, he gave me a call. I called him back. He said, Ed, great hire. Joe worked for me. I think he's going to do tremendous things for you at LSU, and he was exactly right.
No question. The AP midseason All-American team has come out. LSU well-represented. Joe Burrow is the starting quarterback on the first-team AP midseason All-American team. Grant Delpit as at the safety position, and true freshman Derek Stingley Jr. at the cornerback position. Three first-team members of the AP midseason All-American team. That ain't too shabby. Tigers favored by 20 in this one. The Saints getting ready for the Chicago Bears, and apparently they're going to work out running back Travaris Cadet yet again, who's had two stints in Saints land on his resume to date. So they're always looking, getting people ready just in case. Does that say something about Alvin Kamara? Well, we don't know just yet about his status for the game in the Windy City this Sunday. But Jared Cook and Latavius Murray have emerged with the Saints after putting in some relentless work. And if you have it, CD, Sean Payton talked about Latavius Murray and his outing against Jacksonville, which we don't have. That's okay. But he was tremendous. He's big, runs physically, and is now really in tune with the Saints' scheme of things. So that's good. And Drew Brees is throwing NFL footballs, not Nerf footballs, but NFL footballs, and he says his rehab is well ahead of schedule. All right, let me tell you what we have coming up. Chandler Rome, Houston Chronicle. We'll head out to the Bronx and get this preview less than an hour away from first pitch, Game 3, Astros and the Yankees. Logan Lowry covers the Mississippi State Bulldogs for the Tupelo Daily Journal. We'll talk about Garrett Schrader, the starting quarterback, and does he give the Bulldogs a snowball's chance in you-know-what against the Tigers. And Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, with his look-see around the SEC. It's all coming your way a quick version of the Jordy Helfrich Show right here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Baseball talk next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
We've got some afternoon baseball coming up at a little bit after 3 o'clock right here on 1037 The Game. It's Game 3 of the ALCS series tied at a game apiece thanks to Carlos Correa's dramatic walk-off home run in the 11th at Minute Maid Park that evened the series. And, you know, momentum is a special thing in baseball, but it's only as good as your next starting pitching. And Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle joining us from venerable Yankee Stadium. I kind of like the momentum that the Astros have because Gerrit Cole is on the bump yet again. Good afternoon. How are things in the Big Apple?
It is just an absolutely gorgeous day. There's not a cloud in the sky. It's about 62, 63 degrees of if you could pick an afternoon game, and if you pick an afternoon to play baseball, this would be the one to pick. It is absolutely phenomenal here in the Bronx.
That's awesome. Golly, you know, I talked about Gerrit Cole. He's allowed more than two earned runs just twice since the beginning of June. He reached 300 strikeouts this season in the second fewest innings in baseball history. He has been phenomenal. Your thoughts in talking to him, where are we today?
Yeah, I think the Astros have to feel pretty good. I mean, they're sending out a starting pitcher that hasn't lost since May. So that's kind of unforeseen in the playoffs. I am curious, though, to see how he sort of handles. He hasn't seen a lineup like this during his most recent run of unbelievable starts. He struck out 10 or more batters in 11 straight outings. But when you look at I'm not trying to discredit anything Gerrit Cole's done, but when you look at the lineups he faced in those 11 outings, I believe there's only, excluding Tampa Bay in his last two outings, I believe there's only one playoff team, and that was Milwaukee. And look, he's a phenomenal pitcher. He's going to go out there, and he's got good stuff, and good stuff usually plays against good lineups. But this is a lineup unlike any he's ever seen, certainly in the last month and a half. The Rays put up a fight, certainly, but they can't match the lineup that the Yankees have. So it's power on power, and this is a Yankee lineup that if you make a mistake, they really make you pay. And Gerrit Cole is a guy that when he makes mistakes, they're usually up in the strike zone and they're thrown pretty hard. And if you throw a hard mistake up in the strike zone, this Yankee lineup will put it out of the ballpark.
Aaron Judge batting second. That's all I need to say. Chandler Rome, kind enough to join us. What's the history of the Astros against Luis Severino? But he's got that great bullpen backing him. But what's the history between the two?
Yeah, so it's not very good. Severino was hurt pretty much all season. He only made three starts in the regular season, and those were in September, kind of building his arm up. So really don't know what this version of Severino looks like, but if you look to last year and what the Astros faced against Severino, they were not good against him at all. They struck out, I think, 21 times in 16 innings, only got two earned runs against him. So this is not a lineup, at least last year, that had any success against Severino. Now, what we see today from him may be completely different because, like I said, he's been hurt all year. He made three starts in September and then threw against the Twins in the ALDS. It'll be interesting to see what he comes out with. But if he comes out with any sort of stuff like he had last season, the Astros had pronounced struggles against him.
Chandler Rome from picturesque Yankee Stadium on what we would call a Chamber of Commerce day up there in the Bronx. Josh Reddick is set for his starting debut in right field. Why now? What's the logic there?
So they like him against Severino. That this has been their plan all along. They wanted to give Reddick a start here against Severino. kind of get another left-handed bat in there. Kyle Tucker did not look particularly good in game two. They gave him a couple pinch hit opportunities, and he really looked overmatched against some teams that really focused on elevating pitches against him and really going as high in the strike zone as they could, and Tucker really couldn't lay off. I don't think that means that that's the end for Kyle Tucker. I think he'll start another game in this series. But right now, if you look in this lineup, that's probably the biggest glaring hole right now, is they don't have an answer for a right. They don't have an answer in right field. It's either Reddick or it's Tucker, and neither of them have inspired much confidence in September. Reddick certainly hasn't inspired much confidence in the entire second half. So they're going to hope that one of them gets hot and kind of takes that job going forward. But for right now, Reddick will get the start today. I imagine Tucker will start at some point during these three games in Yankee Stadium. But they really need one of those guys to kind of have a breakout and take that spot.
And they even though they have momentum, they still got they've got to get their bats going. They were hitless from the fifth inning on until Correa's walk-off homer in the 11th. Before we get to the hitting, how cool was that at Minute Maid Park? Correa with a great defensive play to save the game, really, and then the walk-off home run, that place sure looked like a fun place to be.
Yeah, it was a huge swing, and certainly the Astros did not want to come to Yankee Stadium down 2-0 in a series. That would have been really difficult for me to envision how the Astros would have come back in this series if they had come to Yankee Stadium down 2-0, especially with their suspect pitching plans in Game Four. They would have really, really been in a difficult position. So more than just the swing itself, I mean, just what it did for the entire series is really kind of, you can't even state how big it was to come here deadlocked at one instead of down 2-0. So they needed that. Like you mentioned, I think people are maybe forgetting a little bit that Correa's home run, while it was huge in the moment, it doesn't overall mask kind of the problems this lineup has had throughout the postseason. They'll really need to get the bats going here in New York, because Gerrit Cole is really good, and they have a couple of good relievers in the bullpen, but the pitching can only carry this team so much. They're going to have to score some runs. They're going to have to score more than two or three runs. They're going to have to put some innings together, you know, really look like the trademark Astros lineup we saw all year, because they really have been sputtering throughout the postseason.
Chandler, you say it's a beautiful day there today. Apparently tomorrow is not going to be the case. What are they saying about Game 4 and the possibility of it being a washout and maybe having to move the game? I mean, that's an extra day in New York for you. That's not a bad gig on the Chronicle's dime, but, I mean, what are you hearing so far?
Yeah, so the forecast does not look good. They haven't really said much. I think they're going to – they don't want to commit to much right now. They really want to get through this game and then kind of figure it out. I would imagine if tomorrow's washed out, they would just move everything back. You know, game four would be on Thursday, game five on Friday, and then kind of go from there. From the Astros' perspective, that really would be kind of ideal for them to have a rainout tomorrow, because they would be able to bring back Greinke back on regular rest to start game four if it is on Thursday. They would be able to throw Justin Verlander on regular rest in game five if it's on Friday. But if it's not washed out, they're going to have to throw a bullpen game. And likely a guy, Jose Urquidy, who's made 9 major league appearances, would likely be their bulk guy. And, you know, Urquidy had a great September, and he impressed a lot of people, but this is Yankee Stadium, the American League Championship Series. It's a completely different task entirely. So I think secretly the Astros are probably hoping for a rainout, but you know, everything like that has a counterpoint, where the Yankees would be able to bring back Masahiro Tanaka on regular rest for Game 4 if it's pushed back, and Tanaka was brilliant against the Astros in Game 1. So kind of a double-edged sword, but I know the Astros, from a purely pitching perspective, it would line up much better to them if there's a rainout.
It's always a compliment. I'm sure A.J. Hinch is very flattered. And Joe Espada was interviewed by the Cubs for their open managerial job. That's quite a feat.
Yeah, and Espada was the guy that, frankly, a lot of people in the industry were surprised last year when he did not get a managerial job. He's a bilingual 44-year-old guy from Puerto Rico that has actually began his major league coaching career in the Yankees organization with their third base coach for a little while before A.J. Hinch hired him in 2017. The feeling is, now I'm going to say this, and this was also the feeling last year in the industry, but the feeling is that he will get a managerial job at some point this year. But again, that's what people thought last year, and he interviewed a couple of places and didn't end up getting one. So he'll be a trendy target again for some managerial jobs this winter, this offseason, and it'll start with the Cubs. I'm sure some other teams will want him. But the Astros employees are in high demand. You saw it last year. You've seen it in the last couple of years since their renaissance sort of started. A lot of teams want to copy what they've been doing, and the first way to do that is to hire from within their organization.
No question. Chandler Rome, Houston Chronicle, we'll let you get out on this one. You've been to all the ballparks throughout the major leagues. What's the feeling like, Yankee Stadium playoff, with all the history that's there? Where does this one rate for you?
So actually, this will be my first playoff game at Yankee Stadium. I've seen regular season games, and it's great. It's an awesome venue. You know, I saw Fenway Park last year in the playoffs when the Astros were in the ALCS. But I'm really intrigued. I'm more intrigued, actually, for Game 4 and Game 5, because those are night games. And night playoff games in Yankee Stadium will sure be something else. I'm sure the crowd will be rowdy today, even though it's a day game, but I'm really excited to see a night game here.
Chandler, thanks for the time. First pitch is less than an hour away, so we greatly appreciate the time. Have a good one, and here's hoping that Gerrit Cole continues his mastery on the hill, buddy. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that's Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. Again, Game 3 starting. We'll go till 3 o'clock, and then let's play ball in the Bronx. We'll get to football next. LSU facing Mississippi State. They're a prohibitive favorite. The Bulldogs going with a true freshman quarterback. Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal joins us next to talk about that here on the Jordy Helfert Show.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfert Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Jordy Helfert Show on this Tuesday, the 15th day of October. This Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Central Time, Starkville, Mississippi. LSU will continue to try to remain undefeated and in contention for some really good things down the road. They got to get past the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Logan Lowry is our go-to guy every time we talk about Mississippi State for the Tupelo Daily Journal. And Logan, kind enough to join us this afternoon. Logan, 3-3 for the Bulldogs. A lot of people say they might be one of the more disappointing teams in the SEC. What are your thoughts halfway through the season?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. You know, Mississippi State's got two losses that I just didn't see them having at this point in the season. That was against Kansas State. They lost that game 31-24 here at home. And then this past weekend, they lost 20-10 at Tennessee, you know, a team that has just been bad for the last couple of years. And State didn't play well at all up in Knoxville last weekend. Looked terrible in all three phases. I mean, just 267 yards of offense was all they could get, and 132 of those came in the fourth quarter. So just wasn't able to get anything done in that game against the Vols this past weekend.
Joe Moorhead announced rather quickly when asked at his Mondays with Moorhead press conference that Garrett Schrader is going to start, the true freshman quarterback. Says he gives them the best chance to win. How so?
I just think the fact that he can move, you know, he does a lot of things with his feet. He does a lot of improvisation with the football. And, you know, Tommy Stevens started the year off hot for Mississippi State, you know, obviously transferring in as a grad transfer from Penn State, right, and had a lot of experience in Joe Moorhead's offense and was playing really, really well for the first game and a half. And then he gets injured against Southern Miss, hurts his shoulder, and, you know, tries to play through that and just really just never was healthy. Then he injures his ankle against Auburn, just has kind of been beat up, you know, since that second game of the season, and just hasn't been the same type of quarterback Garrett Schrader's came in and spelled him during that time and even started the game against Kentucky and played pretty well against the Wildcats. Led State to a 28-13 win in that game. But, you know, Garrett Schrader is able to, you know, throw the ball pretty well. He runs the ball pretty well. Just kind of gives them a true dual threat quarterback back there. And, you know, he's a promising young player, even as a true freshman. You can see that this guy's going to be a superstar in years to come. He just needs experience. And the team, you know, it follows behind him. He's a leader. They believe in him. And, you know, I think that's the best option. I don't think that, you know, they're going to win or anything this weekend, but I do think that they'll be able to move the football a little bit better with him at quarterback.
He's a big old strong kid for a freshman. Kylan Hill, still over 600 yards on the ground, averaging over 100 yards per game. I got to believe with the quarterback issues, teams are trying to stack the box, but he's still getting it done. He must be one of the bright spots of the year.
Well, he wasn't able to get the job done last week, and that goes back to the offensive line had a terrible day. Kylan Hill ran the ball 11 times for 13 yards against Tennessee. He hasn't played well the last couple of weeks. He picked up most of those yardage, you know, in the first four games for State, and you know, he's still averaging over 100 yards, but you know, he's been held in check the last two times out for State. But State's offensive line was terrible. You know, they like I said, you have the leading rusher in the SEC going into last week, and you know, he runs for 13 yards. You know, his longest carry of the day was 4 yards, and it's just not going to get it done. And the offensive line, Tennessee had 8 sacks all year going into last week, and they had 7 against Mississippi State. So that's kind of how that game sort of went. So State's got some problems along its offensive line.
You lost. You had the number one defense in the league a year ago, maybe one of the best in the country a year ago. You lost a whole bunch. They're making a lot of money playing in the NFL now. Kind of sum up this defense and how it's performed so far.
It's hard to get a gauge on State defensively because of those suspensions that we talked about, you know, earlier in the season. State's got 10 players that are suspended for 8 games, and you know, they get to pick and kind of choose which games they play in. I don't think they'll play this weekend against LSU, but you know, among those players is their starting linebacker Willie Gay and starting defensive tackle Lee Autry. And when those guys play, State usually, you know, is much better defensively. But you know, it's kind of a trickle down effect. You know, they're having to push guys up, you know, that maybe should only be on special teams. Now they're having to play roles on offense and defense, and guys that you know should be on the sideline are having to play on special teams. And you know, it's just kind of a trickle down effect, and you know, it kind of brings the team down in that regard. You know, they're still a pretty good defense. They're really solid at linebacker. They're really young on the interior on the defensive line. When Lee Autry does not play, Mississippi State is starting 2 redshirt freshmen at defensive tackle and nose guard. So they get really young and really inexperienced really quickly there. But you know, they're pretty strong in the secondary. Got a really good linebacking core. So they're okay defensively. But it, you know, like I said, last year they had the number one defense in the country. So it's nothing but a drawback from that.
So I guess the schemes are still good, but it's just the personnel is different. You got to play with who you've got on your roster, right?
Exactly. And in States, you know, they actually have had a takeaway in 22 straight games. They got 16 takeaways this year, which is number 3 in the country in that regard. So they do a good job of creating turnovers on defense. But like I said, they're giving up a lot of yardage, you know, in between that time. And, you know, teams have been able to throw on them. The teams have been able to run on them. So it's just not the same defense that you saw out there last year. And, you know, some of that's a lot of that's personnel reasons. And like I said, they're kind of behind the 8 ball with some of those suspensions as well.
Logan Lowry, Tupelo Daily Journal. From this part of the world, Keaton Thompson is a Louisiana native. What's happened to him? What's going on there?
Well, you know, when he lost the starting job in camp, he was competing with Tommy Stevens for the starting job. They made the decision, you know, he entered the transfer portal, and he's still in the transfer portal. He just didn't transfer. He's still on the team. They're trying to redshirt him. He actually has a redshirt year available. He has not played a single snap this season. So, you know, obviously he can still play in 4 games this year. But, you know, and Joe Moorhead was actually asked about Keaton yesterday and just asked, you know, where in the mix he was at quarterback. And he says, you know, he's the third-team guy right now, and they'd still like to redshirt him. And, he said that he would play Keaton if he thought Keaton gave them the best option to win football games. And, you know, he said he's just not there right now.
Huh, okay. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you your thoughts on this this LSU football team, and what did Joe say about them?
He's got, you know, he just how good their offense has become under Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow has made that next step, and, you know, he was just an average quarterback at best last year. He's just kind of okay, you know, not bad, not anything great, but, you know, he's definitely, you know, he's a Heisman contender right now. I think he'd probably be number two in that regard, you know, behind Jalen from Oklahoma. So, you know, LSU has really just turned the corner. You know, they've always had really good receivers, but for the past few years, they just haven't had a quarterback that could get them the football. And this whole change of scheme, you know, kind of a modern scheme, you know, that spread style offense is finally trickled down to Baton Rouge, and they are really lighting up the school board, chewing up tons of yardage. And, you know, it's going to be a whole lot different game than it was down in Baton Rouge last year. LSU scored one touchdown against Mississippi State last year, and that was on a 3-yard drive.
LSU hopes
they're going to score quite a few more this year.
Yeah. LSU hopes it's a lot different than the last time they were in Starkville. And Ed Orgeron has made a point of saying, I'm going to remind the team about what happened there if they forgot. He said it was the loudest venue they played in at that point in time. The cowbells, the music, and all that. And he said an interesting thing, and I want your thoughts on this. He says, seems like every year Mississippi State has a game that they have circled. And this is, of course, excluding Ole Miss and the Egg Bowl, but it always seems to be LSU is the one. Is that truthful there? Is significant, important game for Mississippi State against LSU?
I don't think so. I mean, if it is, I mean, I haven't, you know, I don't think that this is like a huge game for State. I mean, I think people are bracing for impact here in Starkville for this game. I think it's going to, you know, a lot of people were, you know, most people get excited when you're the 2:30 CBS game of the week. And, you know, when that was announced the other day, people were like, oh, God, here, this is going to be awful. So, yeah, like I said, State was able to, you know, it was a skull dragon here in Starkville the last time. It was 37-7 or something like that. You know, they beat LSU pretty good, but it may
pretty
be the
bad.
Other way around this time when they play.
I tell you what, you hold LSU to 37. That's a moral victory there. The way they're going, averaging nearly 53 points a game. Never in my wildest imagination did I think this. But before the season, Joe Burrow said, "Don't be surprised. We're going to be averaging 40, 50, maybe 60 points a game." He's been quite prophetic. All right, so they're not looking forward to the 2:30 game. Is the crowd still supporting this club? Are they still showing up?
Well, they haven't played at home in a month. So, you know, they were still pretty good the last time they played at home. And I'm not expecting, I mean, there may be more LSU fans in the stands than there are State fans this week. I mean, it's, after that loss to Tennessee, I think that was kind of the last straw for some of those holdovers that were still, you know, on the Joe Moorhead bandwagon. You know, that he's got to come up with some big wins here down the stretch to win those people back over. But, yeah, right now, you know, people looked at him, you know, he underachieved last year. You know, that was a really good team that he inherited, and they only won 8 games a year ago. And, you know, this year, you know, it was still a pretty decent team, and, you know, they've only won 3 games so far. And like I said, they should be at that 5-win mark, you know, in my opinion. So, you know, he's underachieved again this year. So, you know, like I said, a lot of those people are jumping off the wagon. So he's got to figure out a way to bring them back home. Down the stretch.
Logan Lowry, Tupelo Daily Journal. We always greatly appreciate it whenever LSU and Mississippi State tee it up in whatever sport. You're always available for us. We thank you, my friend. Take care.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy. We'll take a timeout here. That brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. Tigers are going to travel their equipment up to Starkville with a Peterbilt truck because it's reliable, it's dependable, it's safe, and it is oh so comfortable. And it looks great. It's gold with the purple stripes. It looks terrific. Peterbilt of Louisiana, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and Lake Charles. New, used, we lease them. We've got a service department. We got the parts that you need as well. Peterbilt of Louisiana. Mr. College Football, next. We'll be right back. continue on this Tuesday edition of the Jordy Helper Show. Let's bring in our good friend, Mr. College Football himself, Mr. Tony Barnhart. Tony, if I told you this is a team averaging nearly 53 points a game with a Heisman Trophy contending quarterback, golly, would you ever say that's got to be LSU, huh?
Yeah, got to be LSU. I keep going back to a conversation I had with Joe Burrow at SEC Media Day. And I just said, hey, Joe, I mean, you guys are talking a lot about this offense, but, man, are you really going to run it when the chips are down? And he went, oh, yeah, we're going to run it. Just watch. I said, and I have not forgotten that conversation. And the boy, wow, is he having a terrific year, as is the whole offense.
Yeah, over 6,400,000 viewers of the LSU-Florida game, ESPN's most watched college football game in 2 years. You're watching the game from afar. What did you see?
I tell you what impressed me. We Joe Burrow did what Joe Burrow does and the offense does, and it was a great, great performance. But what jumped off the screen at me was two things. Number one, that LSU ran for over 200 yards against a really, really good defense. And that from the point on when Florida took the lead 28-21, LSU shut them down and just dominated with 21 straight points. Those are the things that those were the wow moments for me.
Yeah, Tiger Stadium was at its finest in that one. Tony Barnhart, kind enough to join us. Let's look ahead now. What's the most interesting game? I'll throw some action. Tell me which one piques your curiosity the most. Is it Florida coming off a tough loss at South Carolina, coming off the biggest win in the Will Muschamp tenure in Columbia? Or is it maybe Texas A&M not living up to the billing that everyone anticipated at a suddenly not too bad Ole Miss team?
Well, I think it's the South Carolina-Florida game because I'm anxious to see. Florida's coming off a very, very difficult game where they laid it all on the line. South Carolina's coming off it's easily its best win in a long, long time. They're playing in Columbia. They were playing in the swamp. I would say, you know, Florida's got too much for them. But the South Carolina comeback and how exciting is that atmosphere going to be? Florida's got a week off after this to get ready to play Georgia. You know, Florida's a better team, but what's going to be their mindset going to Columbia?
What's going on in Athens, Georgia? What's the sentiment about Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs? I mean, they obviously overlooked South Carolina, but what's going on there?
Well, I was there yesterday and talked to Kirby Smart and some of the other people. It was a bad case of the Mondays in Athens. That was not something that anybody was expecting. They were thinking about, you know, we're going to go undefeated down to Jacksonville, and that's going to be the game against the Gators. And it still is. The main thing to remember about Georgia is all of their goals are still there. I mean, if they win out, they win the SEC East, and they go to the SEC Championship game, and they can get into the playoffs. So, but, folks are not happy. They're not happy with the offense. They're not happy with four turnovers. They're not happy with the way that South Carolina's defense was able to sort of keep the running game in check, you know, down to an average of 4 yards a carry, which is really low for Georgia. But, South Carolina had a game plan. They executed, and Georgia helped them with 4 turnovers.
Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, kind enough to join us. LSU travels to Starkville to take on Mississippi State. Do you see any issues there?
No, because Mississippi State's not in a good place right now. Their quarterbacks are not playing well. Joe Moorhead's catching a lot of flack, and let's put it this way: LSU can not play its A game and still win. So it might be an ugly game, but the balance that LSU has now is going to be really difficult for a team like Mississippi State to handle.
There's a lot of games left to be played. Auburn comes into Tiger Stadium a week from Saturday. Then the Tigers, will take a little break, and then it's the big showdown in November against Alabama. Considering both clubs and what you've seen so far, and we can do this. Coaches certainly don't do this, but what do you think LSU's chances in Tuscaloosa are this year?
Oh, I think they're good. I think they're good because they have a clear they are clearly they know who they are. They know who they want to be, and they said, look, we're going to be great on offense, and our defense is going to get better as the season goes along. And we got and we're going to get the running game cranked up. And the fact that, those last two things are starting to happen makes LSU a very, very dangerous team. I just say we go to Tuscaloosa and first team to 50 wins. Let's just do it that way. So.
I'm going to tell you what.
40
really,
not,
really good quarterbacks, some really good yeah. wide receivers. That's awesome. But who's your coach of the year through the halfway mark of the season?
Oh, it's Coach O. Got to be Coach O. Yeah. I mean, look at what he's done. We knew LSU. We knew their personnel. We knew that the great talent in the defensive backfield. But for them to put in a new offense, and this is a new offense, and to execute it at this level, they were executing at a high level from day one. Ed Orgeron had went out and says, you know what? What I'm doing offensively is not working. Well, it may work against 9 out of the 12 teams I play, but the goal here is to beat Alabama. Well, what we're doing here is not going to beat Alabama. He recognized that and went out and got somebody to help. And Joe Burrow became Joe Burrow under these guys, under Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger. So yeah. I think for recognizing that, Coach O's got to be your coach of the year.
Yeah, at $4 million a year, he might be a bargain compared to some of the other coaches out there. You've seen all these teams play throughout the country. Give me your top four teams based on primarily what you have seen here to date.
Well, right now I've got Alabama 1, LSU 2, Ohio State 3, and Clemson 4. I may have Clemson rated too high, Oklahoma 5. I think it's going to be – the thing about it is, and I've told everybody this, I ask, look, if Clemson goes 13-0, they're in, okay? If they go 12-1, we're going to have a big argument. Mm-hmm. But Clemson is going to be in if they go undefeated. I think Alabama and LSU is basically a coin flip. It's two teams that are built very similar, who have great quarterbacks and great wide receivers. And all I know is if you play in the defensive backfield for either one of those teams, when they play each other, you better hold on. I mean, think about Alabama and LSU. What they do, you know what's coming. You know what they're going to do. You just can't stop it. And that's what makes it so difficult.
That's right. Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football. Man, thank you so much for your time, buddy. And enjoy this weekend's festivities in the SEC. Always a pleasure.
All right, Jordy. See ya.
Take care, my friend. All right, that's going to do it for us today because we're turning it over to Astros playoff baseball. Game 3 in the Bronx. Garrett Cole for the Astros. Luis Severino for the Yankees. Series tied at a game apiece. Enjoy the ball game. Game 3 right here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 1037 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Heltberg. Play ball!